Where is the justice for me? In 1989, I surrendered myself to the police for crimes I knew I was innocent of in an effort to seek justice through the court system in Savannah, Georgia. But like so many death penalty cases, that was not my fate, and I've been denied justice. During my imprisonment, I have lost more than my freedom. I lost my father, and my family has suffered terribly, many times being treated as less than human and even as criminals. In the past, I have had lawyers who refused my input and would not represent me in the manner that I wanted to be represented. I have had witnesses against me threatened into making false statements to seal my death sentence, and witnesses who wanted to tell the truth were vilified in court. That's the first paragraph of a plea from Troy Davis, Where is the Justice for Me?, that is on his website, TroyAnthonyDavis.org. Troy Anthony Davis is on death row in Georgia, and on Monday, March 17th, 2008, the Georgia Supreme Court decided 4-3 to deny a new trial for him, despite significant concerns regarding his innocence. Just a couple of facts about Troy's case. He's been on death row in Georgia for more than 16 years for the murder of police officer Mark Allen McPhail at a Burger King in Savannah, Georgia, despite strong evidence suggesting he is innocent. There was no physical evidence against Troy Davis. The weapon used in the crime was never found. The case against him consisted entirely of witness testimony. 7 of the 9 non-police witnesses have recanted or contradicted their testimony. Many of these witnesses have stated they were pressured or coerced by police. One of the 2 witnesses who has not recanted or contradicted his testimony is Sylvester Coles, the principal alternative suspect in the crime. 9 individuals have signed affidavits implicating this other man, Sylvester Coles. Joining us to talk today about Troy Anthony Davis's case is his sister, Martina Correa. Hello, Martina.
Hello, how are you? Thank you for having me.
I'm good. Thanks for coming on today to discuss this very important case. I'm sure it's very important to you. I'm wondering if you can start off by just telling us how Troy got into this mess to begin with. Was it kind of a situation of being in the wrong place at the wrong time, or what?
Exactly. One night in August 1989, Troy actually had left our subdivision with some friends, and they went to play pool downtown Savannah, Georgia, which is near a housing project called Yamacraw Village. That is where Sylvester Coles lives. And Troy knew Sylvester Coles and several of the other people that down there because my aunt used to live across the street from him and his family. So we knew of him. And Troy and some friends were down playing pool. And later what took place was Sylvester Coles was actually waiting to play pool, and there was a homeless man, Larry Young, who was one of the witnesses, who was coming to buy some beer for him and some of his other friends who were homeless at the time. And when he came out of the convenience store, Sylvester Coles began to antagonize him, asking for his beer and intimidating him. And an argument ensued between those 2 gentlemen, Larry Young and Sylvester Coles. Sylvester Coles was following this young man up the street, and they were in a big argument back and forth, calling each other all kind of racial slurs. Both are African-American. And Sylvester Coles making threats. Well, someone yelled into the pool hall that Red is what they call Sylvester Coles. That's his nickname because he's very light-complected. Is going to shoot this guy over a can of beer. And my brother Troy and another 16-year-old, Troy was known in a community kind of like the UN. He was always trying to diffuse the situation and try to tell people, you know, let's work it out. You know, there's no need for guns and things like that. But anyway, Troy and a 16-year-old Daryl Collins, Daryl D.D. Collins, followed the 2 up to the bus stop. And by this time, Sylvester Coles was pistol-whipping Larry Young, and his girlfriend was running inside to get help. And Troy and Daryl Collins tried to intervene. And Sylvester Red Coles actually turned his gun on to Troy and D.D. Collins and, you know, said, you know, you don't know me, and called them racial slur, you know, get out of my business. Well, they left the scene, and as they were running away, they got back down near the pool hall, and they said they heard shots. Well, they just thought that Sylvester Coles was shooting at Larry Young, but what took place was an off-duty police officer, Officer Mark Allen McPhail, was coming outside of the Burger King to see what the disturbance was. He had his arm raised with his nightstick, never drew his weapon, and the person that was in the parking lot with the gun turned and fired at him because he yelled, "Hold it," and the person turned. I don't know if they knew it was a police officer or not, and fired at the police officer. He was shot onto the arm and fell to the ground, and then the person shot them again, and so he later died. Well, Sylvester Coles ran away from the scene, leaving Larry Young bleeding at the Burger King, and other people just running. Nobody knew what was happening. It was 12:30 at night. It was in a dark parking lot. And anyway, Sylvester Coles went and hid his guns, and some witnesses testified they saw him hiding guns. And then he ran back up to the scene and actually asked somebody else to go up to the scene to see what was going on. He came back sweating very profusely, nervous, and they later testified that he changed his clothes. And probably the next day, he showed up at the police department with a lawyer, and no one knew who had shot the police officer, what had taken place, because it was so dark. And as Sylvester Cole said, he practically received immunity because Larry Young, the guy that was being attacked, pistol whipped, said, "That's the guy right there. When he came in the police station, that's the guy that attacked me." And the police said to Larry Young, "No, this guy is helping us with the case. You must be mistaken." And he said, "No, this is the guy." And so what took place was Sylvester Coles came in with a lawyer, said he threw away his guns. He didn't know where they were. And he said a boy named Troy shot the police officer. And the boy named Troy lived in Cloverdale, named our subdivision. And that's how Troy was implicated into the crime. And then next thing you know, the witnesses that had been describing Sylvester Coles, they took the witnesses to the scene with Sylvester Coles, and of course they're in the parking lot with the person that they're describing as the person who possibly killed the police officer, and then next thing you know, they're describing Troy. But no one really knew what Troy looked like until they raided my mother's house, because Troy didn't have any police mugshot or anything like that. So they raided my mother's house in the next 2 days and took a picture of Troy, and that's how they got the description of Troy. But Sylvester Coles was the one that gave them Troy.
So initially the witnesses, and there was, it looks like, 9 of them at the scene, or 10, were implicating Sylvester Coles, and then the police decided he was going to be their star witness or something, and used him to basically kind of turn around.
Yes.
Mm-hmm.
And
so what happened with those witnesses?
That's all
then?
In statements, and that's all in court documents.
Mm-hmm. So what happened with those police, with the 9 non-police witnesses, Sylvester Coles being a police witness, what happened with their, with them? They just suddenly changed their story, or what?
Yeah, all of them were actually witnesses for the prosecution. The reason that they call them non-police witnesses is because they had police officers who were testifying that, you know, what happened once they got to the scene. So that's why they describe them as a non-police witnesses. But what happened was, one witness, Daryl Collins, D.D. Collins, he was a 16-year-old there who was interrogated for 6-7 hours with no lawyer, no parents, and threatened with a death sentence and life without parole himself. And he was the first to recant. And, we weren't allowed, my family was not allowed in the courtroom. They put us on a witness list so that we could not be allowed in the courtroom, and we had to sit outside on a stone bench. So the only time my family was allowed in the courtroom to support my brother was to beg for his life during the sentencing phase. But it took 2 years for them to try to build a case against Troy, and all of it was eyewitness testimony. There was never any gun, never any gunpowder residue, never any DNA, clothing, anything to link Troy to the crime. And he was not the person that was attacking Larry Young, and everyone said the person that shot the police officer was the person that was pistol-whipping Larry Young.
Mm-hmm.
But yet still, they still convicted Troy of assaulting Larry Young as well. But after Troy was convicted and put on death row, Newt Gingrich came into power as the Speaker of the House, and they said that no federal money would be used at the resource to fund these resource centers that were defending death row inmates. So from 1991, when Troy was convicted and sentenced to death, to 1996, Troy had no lawyer working on his case. And then in the Georgia Resource Center would always step in, and then they would tell the courts, well, they didn't have any money. Well, in the state of Georgia, you don't have to have a lawyer for post-conviction appeals. And then 1996, the witnesses, multiple witnesses began to recant to 2003. But what happened then was President Clinton signed into law the 1996 Anti-Terrorism and Effective Death Penalty Act. And what that stated was that you only had 1 year to bring forth new evidence to prove your innocence. But what President Clinton did in order to attack the terrorists that attacked the World Trade Center, I think the first time they had that botched bombing in the 80s, was he made the law retroactive 10 years. So that law was signed into law in 1996, but it became effective as of 1986. The case that Troy was involved in was in 1989. So when that law came into effect, it had already cut off Troy's appeal, saying that, you know, you only have 1 year from your conviction. Well, that would have been 1992. So what we've been battling is we've had the affidavits, we've had the information, the witnesses have been coming forward. Even one witness has stated that, you know, promises have been made to her by the prosecution, because most of these witnesses had pending cases. They were thugs. One witness couldn't even read and write the statement that was signed. And what they didn't know, the police gave them, and that's what witnesses testified to. And so what we've been battling is, every time we go to court, they said, okay, well, you have these witness statements. You should have brought it forward within a year after conviction. Well, he didn't have a lawyer the first five years.
He didn't even have an attorney during that time.
He didn't even have an attorney. So they were trying to kill him on a technicality.
I see. So what you're saying is you have all this evidence of his innocence, but because of technicalities, you're unable to get it into the courts.
Right. The courts don't have to look at it, and that's what they're saying.
Uh-huh. So there was, again, no physical evidence, no weapon.
No.
Was ever found. This is entirely on witness testimony, and what you're saying is that the majority of the witnesses have recanted and contradicted their original testimony, and you have affidavits to that effect?
Yes, seven of the nine eyewitnesses that testified against him. The eighth witness, the reason that he did not recant is because the only thing that he could identify was that the shooter was left-handed and the color of his shirt. Troy is right-handed.
Mm-hmm.
And the ninth witness is Sylvester Red Coles, and nine additional people have come forward and said that they have either saw him shoot the police officer, or they have firsthand knowledge that he's bragged about killing the police officer in detail.
Interesting.
And he's the only person that testified that he had a gun that night. And he testified that he had a .38 caliber weapon. He said it was a snub-nosed .38 that he threw away.
Why didn't the police try to recover that weapon?
That's the question.
Did they try to recover that weapon?
No, there's never been a recovery of that weapon.
He
said he gave it to somebody, then he said he threw it away under a bush, and nobody ever made him produce a weapon, nor was he ever tested for gunpowder residue.
Do you have any of the original police statements from these witnesses that you say have, that they changed their story? Originally, they were implicating Sylvester Coles.
Oh, definitely.
So that's in the original police reports that they
That's in everything. And actually, you can go online to www.aiusa.org for amnestyinternational.org.
Mm-hmm.
And there's a 35-page report called Where is the Justice for Me? And it has all the witness statements, the change in the statements, and it gives you a breakdown of the case, and so you can read it for yourself.
Where is the Justice for Me?
Yes.
AIUSA.org?
Yes.
Okay, that's very good to know. So why did these witnesses, why did they say that their original testimony was incorrect when they recanted?
Well, like I said, one witness said that, you know, he couldn't read and write. He was on parole, and he had some issues, so the police were threatening. The police threatened pretty much everybody with jail time. A couple of the witnesses were Dorothy Farrell, one of the key eyewitnesses, that said that she was across the street upstairs at a hotel and said that she saw Troy in the parking lot. You couldn't even identify who was in the parking lot. She was on parole and heading back to prison. And there were favors made to her from the prosecutor. And as a matter of fact, when people start finding out what was going on, she even wrote a letter to the prosecutor, and she calls him by first name and asking him for assistance in some other case. And I think people had got on to him. So what he did was he eventually released that letter and saying, you know, what she was doing is a good job, you know, testifying against Troy. But she testified that they had been making her promises and were keeping her out of jail. But then when Troy was convicted, you know, pretty much all that was off the books because she's gone to prison several times. She's a career criminal. And then Darryl Collins was 16 years old, and he was interrogated without a lawyer, without parents, and threatened that he would get life without parole if he did not testify against Troy. Larry Young, the man that was being pistol whipped, he testified before the parole board last July when Troy had an execution date pending. He said that they refused to give him medical attention until he told them what they wanted to hear. He said they just kept telling him Troy was the one that did it. It wasn't this guy. It was Troy. Troy and these guys look like, he said that he bled so much from the wound in his head till the blood dried up, and he subsequently had to have two surgeries for blood clots to the brain. And so this is the type of thing, I mean, they came in our neighborhood, and a couple of the guys that were in the neighborhood that knew Troy had pending cases, they told them, you know, they would not release them until they would say Troy did it. And that's what these guys came to the parole board, and they testified before. Mm-hmm. And the thing about it is the Georgia Supreme Court doesn't operate with the parole board, so they didn't even discuss the fact that the witnesses did come forward and had been interrogated, because one of their things when they denied Troy a couple of weeks ago was that the recanted testimony is not as strong as the trial testimony because they haven't been cross-examined. They were cross-examined for more than 5 hours at the parole board. That's why the parole board gave Troy a stay initially.
And my understanding is that even in the original trial, that the witness testimony contained inconsistencies.
Yes. But we have one newspaper here, and that newspaper buried Troy. I mean, it was terrible. It was like you were just afraid to be a black person and even think about saying you support Troy Davis.
Wow.
Because the courtroom was separated black and white. I mean, the victim's family came in under armed guards. Our family was sitting outside on a stone bench, treated like we were the bane of society.
Did you feel it was a jury of his peers?
I think so, because the jury was a blend black and white. But, I mean, the prosecutor didn't allow anybody on the jury unless you have to be a death-qualified jury. If you say that you would
support
not
the death
vote
penalty.
For the death penalty, you couldn't be on the jury.
Right.
You know, and for 2 years, they just, I mean, they put in it that my brother didn't graduate from high school. My brother graduated from high school with honors. You know, they said anything they could. They made it seem like he was just thugged, and then they came up with this, or he shot the police officer over a can of beer with a smirky smile. And, I mean, that's just adjectives that somebody threw in there, and they've just been running with it. If you could research the paper in Savannah, I've talked to lawmakers and people, city officials here, and it's like, Martina, you can't fight the media here because they've been reporting the news the same way since the 50s and 60s. So it doesn't matter that we have a black mayor and an alderman, because they don't have any power. I had a state lawmaker, African-American state lawmaker, came up to me and my mother and said this summer, well, Martina, everybody knows that Sylvester Coles is guilty. And I was like, well, how do you know that? He said, well, why isn't he in jail? I said, well, tell me why he's in jail. Because they're trying to save face. He said, because he's been around in the community when he gets drunk, and he brags about it. And this man says he knows of people who he's bragged to. But he was not willing to come forward because he doesn't want to lose his political ties that he's gained in the community. That's the kind of community I live in.
So have any of the original jury members, have they come forward since the trial to say they're concerned about some of this new evidence that's come out since and the recanting of the original testimonies?
I believe there's four jurors that have come forward and signed affidavit. One even lived in Chicago, and he was even quoted. She was quoted in the paper that said that they had this evidence, they would never have voted for death for Troy.
Yeah.
And see, one thing is that there's 159 counties in the state of Georgia. They've been 5 death row exonerations in the state of Georgia. 2 are from the county that Troy was convicted in.
Mm-hmm.
This is not a rare occurrence. This happens. We've had several DNA exonerations where men have gone to prison for life for manslaughter and rape, and they're all black men, and they've all been found not guilty. And what the prosecutor has been doing is saying, well, they just got off on a technicality, so he could just still say that they're guilty. But he's been cited with even misconduct in several cases. But he's been run opposed for 24 years. So, see, this is a type of situation that we're dealing with. You know, even police officers come up to me, and they could not believe that the court denied Troy, because the thing about everybody knows, but it's like the prosecutor can't afford another loss. Georgia can't afford another exoneration because they feel like they're the only state that's doing the death penalty justice.
And so what were the official reasons, though, that were given by the 4 who voted against?
There was 4 against and 3-4, and the Chief Justice and 2 other senior justices wrote a strong dissenting opinions, and the court was too rigid that they set the bar so high There's never been a case in the history of Georgia where you had 7 eyewitnesses out of 9 recant. They had no other cases to look at. So they set the standard so high that nobody can meet the standard. That's what the Chief Justice said.
What's the standard?
They said that Troy, the witnesses' statements at trial were stronger than recanted testimony. But that's not true. These people are older. They have nothing to gain by helping Troy because they can still face perjury. And in a death penalty case, they can face up to life in prison for perjury.
Mm-hmm.
So they have nothing to gain by helping Troy.
Right.
And they say that, well, we should have submitted an affidavit saying that Troy was right-handed if the shooter was left-handed. I mean, just trivial stuff.
So that was their basic reasoning, their basic reason offered for denying his appeal was that,
and that
the
we should have
witness
brought it forward
testimony
earlier.
At trial was stronger than the recanted, and that they should have brought it forward sooner.
Yes.
I see.
And
what about the 3 who would have agreed to grant him a new trial? What did they say?
The 3 that said Chief Justice Sears said that this was a total miscarriage of justice and that the court erred and that she said it was just morally wrong to make this judgment. That's in her statement, that it was morally wrong. This judgment, she said, it just defiled all morals. So, you know, the thing about it, she did write a strong dissenting opinion. But, you know, it's like, you know, Georgia's this good old boy system. And it's like, you know, we cannot allow people to you know, if they just can't allow people to overturn things and see true justice. And it's really, really sad because the court, when you look at these cases, they vote pretty similar the same way. But, you know, I challenge people that they need to challenge these justices, especially legal minds all over the country, because when you read the brief and why they deny Troy, I mean, it's lawmakers that support the death penalty that are saying that this is wrong.
Uh-huh. I'm speaking with Martina Correa. She's Troy Davis's sister. Again, he's been on death row for 16 years. And there is significant concerns regarding the evidence that was brought forward to convict him originally. Again, it was all witness testimony. There was no weapon found. There was no physical evidence against Troy. Most recently, on Monday, March 17th, the Georgia Supreme Court decided 4-3 to deny a new trial for him despite these concerns. I just have a couple more minutes, Martina, and I wanted to ask you a little bit about how this is affecting your family. I know that in July of 2007, Troy came within 24 hours of being executed before he received a temporary stay of execution, and it was 2 weeks later that the Georgia Supreme Court agreed to hear his motion for a new trial, which they just denied on March 17th. Mm-hmm. How has all of this affected you and your family, if you could talk about that?
Well, I'm going to tell you, it can be very stressful because of the fact that, you know, it's just like one roller coaster ride after the next. I try to maintain a sense of grounding for my family because, I mean, I've been battling advanced cancer for 7 years. Taking chemo for 7 years. And so, you know, I have to maintain a sense of watching the stress for myself. But, I mean, it's just, it's kind of like almost like torture for my mother because it's like back and forth, back and forth. And, you know, people write hatred things in the mail. We get threats from the Ku Klux Klan. It's just really, really terrible. And, I mean, but we have a lot of support from people in the community, people who've been learning about the case. My son has turned this into a positive. My son just actually won a county, regional, and a state award for his research paper and project that he did in Atlanta called How Does the Troy Anthony Davis Case Impact Georgia? And he did a research program on this, and he actually won at the state level. So there's a lot of things that my family is dealing with. We try to stay grounded. We're very faithful, but we're working hard and we're never giving up. But we understand that, you know, right now the Georgia Supreme Court has an opportunity to reconsider this case. And, you know, people say, well, usually they don't go back on a reconsideration once they made a decision. But I'm praying that they will because it's like, you know, people like William Sessions and Bob Barr, like, you know, they're writing briefs and saying, look, this is wrong. You really need to take the time. But we know that if we don't get any way in the courts, that the only way we can get relief is for the parole board. And the parole board has said last year that if there's any doubt that they would not execute. You know, and I'm praying that if we have to go back before the parole board, they won't give my brother life without parole because of the fact that he doesn't deserve that. I think he deserves a full pardon, but it's never happened in the state of Georgia, and I don't know if they will do that, but that's what I'm praying for, because in order for us to go back to parole board, my brother has to have another execution date. That means my brother has to be back in the death chamber. That means my mother has to go back before begging before the parole board, just like we did at court, to say, please don't kill my brother because he's innocent. You know, and
yeah, not only that, the alternative would be life without parole, which is certainly not ideal when you have this much evidence that, you know, questions the original trial. These affidavits from witnesses that have recanted, obviously the ultimate goal would be to get a new trial, to have all that evidence heard for the first time in court. Well, I want to thank you so much for joining me today. I have
thank you for having me.
Wrap up, because I'm going to be calling his attorney in just a minute. But one final thing, if you can just give people the information about how they can read up more on this, if you could repeat the name of that Amnesty International report, where people can find it, and also how folks can find Troy's website and support him.
Well, you can go to www.TroyAnthonyDavis.org. That's www.TroyAnthonyDavis.org. And it has all the details, a breakdown of everything in the case, all the media, everything. Or you can go to www.AIUSA.org or just type in Amnesty International USA and Google, where is the justice for me? That's the name of the 35-page report. It gives a breakdown of everything about Troy's case. And go on Amnesty's website, sign the petition that we have for the parole board. If anyone knows of anybody that lives near the Atlanta or Georgia area, on May 17th at 12 noon, we're going to have a big rally. And the next month, we're going to follow up with a big, giant march in Atlanta. But May 17th, we're going to have a big rally in Georgia for Troy at the state capitol. And they can go on www.gfadp.org for Georgians for Alternatives to the Death Penalty. But any of the Amnesty website has all the contact and links to all the websites. But they can also find Troy's address there. And I tell people to write him a letter, send him words of encouragement, and let him know that there are people all over this country that support him. And he's been getting thousands of letters, and he really appreciates the letters in the mail. But write letters to the editor, to the Atlanta Journal-Constitution, and to the Savannah News Press, and tell them that, you know, we're demanding justice for Troy Anthony Davis, because we cannot keep executing innocent people or even putting them in jail.
Thank you, Martina. Thank you so much for being with me today. And sharing all that information with us.
Thank you.
Take care.
Bye-bye.
Bye-bye. Again, that was Martina Correa, Troy Davis's sister. The website she gave out, TroyAnthonyDavis.org. That's his website. You can read. He has some personal statements up there, as well as a bunch of information in his case. You can also read the report Amnesty International did, Where is the Justice for Me? That's at AIUSA.org. And as she mentioned, there'll be a demonstration May 17th at 12 noon in Atlanta, Georgia. If you want more information about that, you can go to gfadp.org. Georgians for Alternatives to Death Penalty, gfadp.org. Thanks so much for listening to this show, Peace Talks, and to this station, Free Radio Santa Cruz.